Hey, Pablo, imagine this. It's the summer of 2021, and it's the NBA Finals, and we just turn on Game 1, and it is the Nets versus the Lakers.
I am already viscerally excited for this future. Kirk Goldsberry is an NBA analyst for ESPN, a New York Times bestselling author, and a professor at the University of Texas.
Imagine the star power here, Pablo. We have James Harden running a pick and roll with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving on the weak side, Blake Griffin waiting for a lob, DeAndre Jordan too. And then on the Lakers, of course, you have the best player of our generation, LeBron James, teaming up with another superstar, Anthony Davis. And it's these jam-packed games full of superstars. Those players I just named are not just awesome to watch, they also have an enormous influence on which teams are winning and losing those finals. This is a crazy moment in the NBA. It seems like all the best players are convening in a few super cities like Los Angeles and New York. And the question is this good for the NBA at large?
More than any other sport, the NBA is like Hollywood, a star-driven business. A realistic contender now needs two big names on its movie poster, probably even three. But in this age of player empowerment, where stars have more say than ever over where they want to work, a lot of teams are worried. Worried about whether geography really is their destiny. And where that leads. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, March 16th. This is ESPN Daily. Kirk, I don't know anyone who is better qualified for the specific conversation that we are about to have here.
Why would you say that, Pablo?
Well, I say that, Kirk, because we're talking about an NBA story, but also a story that is about maps and about markets and about data and... You happen to be a guy who has worked as a vice president of the Spurs and as the chief analytics guy for USA Basketball, and perhaps even more than all of that, you have a PhD in geography, and this is important here, you saved geography at Harvard University.
Kind of. I don't know if I'd go that far. I taught geography at Harvard. It was one of the coolest things I got to do.
First off, I do have some ties to Harvard, and by that I mean I have debt, financial... And the second thing is, you did, in fact, save this thing. There was not a geography course offered since Harvard eliminated it in the 1940s until you designed and co-taught one. You are the real-life version of that line from the movie Rushmore. I saved Ladin. What did you ever do? You saved geography. What did any of us ever do? Kirk, you've uniquely framed up a geopolitical problem in the NBA, and you do it by first imagining the scene of an NBA Finals with the Brooklyn Nets and the Los Angeles Lakers. And that would be amazing television, but also, as you say, problematic.
It would be awesome. But here's the thing. The NBA isn't just about the finals. They have this other inconvenient thing, an 82-game regular season with 30 organizations playing on a nightly basis. And I wonder if these super teams in these super cities are taking a little bit away from this giant regular season across the markets of the league. The problem at hand is sort of twofold. There's two issues going on. One, the best players in the league are moving around a lot more than ever before. Since 2012, Pablo, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and Kawhi Leonard have combined to win 8 of the 9 finals MVP awards. Each of those guys I just named, Durant, James, and Leonard, have also played for 3 different teams in the last 8 years.
Sounds right.
The second thing is they're moving into these select few markets, the New Yorks, the Los Angeleses, the Bay Area. In geography, Pablo, we talk about migrations, and there's pull factors and push factors when a person decides to leave or migrate to a different place. Mm. And these cities are pulling in the greatest talent, and the small market teams are often exporting that talent at their own expense. undeniably at the very top of the NBA pyramid, there has been a shift in this migration behavior. And undeniably, it's affecting who is winning.
When you look at the constellation of stars that are behaving in this way, where to you does this whole thing start? Where did it begin?
The Big Bang, in this case, started with a man in a pink gingham shirt at the Boys and Girls Club in Greenwich, Connecticut in 2010.
And this fall, man, this is very tough. And this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
And when LeBron James announces to the world that he was taking his talents to South Beach and he was bringing Chris Bosh with him, with Dwayne Wade, to go get those titles.
Not two, not three, not four, not five, not six.
When it comes to this super team movement, these super migrations, it starts with LeBron James in 2010. And LeBron is now switched teams three times, which is something Tim Duncan, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson never did. So I think he is the son of the solar system of the super team era.
So I love that you're borrowing from geography to help describe all of this. And you have this classification system and you divide it into origin markets and destination markets. Those are sort of the haves and the have-nots. How would you define what an origin market is?
Well, I sort of make the provocative point that there are two MBAs, and it sounds a little bit like John Edwards, which I didn't mean to do.
Because I, like many of you, I saw up close to what having two Americas can do to our country.
There are two MBAs. No, in all seriousness, in the world of pro basketball, an origin market, look, draft picks and player development are the lifeblood of small markets like San Antonio, New Orleans, Oklahoma City right now, because they have to be. That's the only way you're going to get Zion. That's the only way you're going to get Giannis. LeBron James isn't moving to Orlando or Memphis.
Yeah.
So you have to grow your own food in these origin markets. You have to very patiently draft and develop your stars and then hope they stay. Meanwhile, in this second NBA, you can just go to the drive-thru and pick out a superstar from the free agency market every summer. What separates the two MBAs is a simple litmus test. Are you an attractive destination for the elite free agents in the NBA or not? And if your answer to that question is no, you better build through the draft. And if the answer is yes, then you have a very luxurious existence where you can get these elite free agents to help you win championships.
So when a destination market team gets hungry, Kirk, and they go up to the order window at the drive-thru, and they want, I don't know, let's say, and to terrify New Orleans, I apologize, New Orleans, but let's say they want to order a Zion, right? Their currency is draft picks, as you said. And what's so startling to me in the Anthony Davis trade, in the Kawhi Leonard trade, teams from destination markets really are willing to pay seemingly more than ever before. We're seeing these enormous clusters of draft picks, entire futures, Kirk, being traded in exchange for that delicious quadruple cheeseburger that might be a Zion Williamson.
I call them like mega transactions because you're essentially emptying your draft cupboards. It's the Herschel Walker trade from old school NFL, but it's happening almost every year where yes. One of these teams is like, here are all my draft picks for the next 5 to 10 years. and some of these aren't going to work, by the way. If the Clippers don't get over, all of a sudden, they're a team that has no championships and no draft picks. It's a risk, make no mistake, but it's a risk that almost every team would be happy to make. But not all the markets can make that risk. And that's what I'm talking about here. It seems like Orlando or even Atlanta or Charlotte just can't play that game. There's three ways that an NBA team can build itself. One is the draft, the other is free agency, and the other is trades. It's beginning to feel like these small market teams only have one leg of that stool, which is the draft.
And so put bluntly then, what is the consequence of this dynamic?
I think one of the consequences is these small markets begin to feel like second-class citizens in the association. They start to feel like AAA feeder teams where you can get somebody like Zion Williamson or Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant into your small market via the draft, but you're not going to hang on to them once they enter their prime. Once they're 28, they hit that second or third contract, that big time money option, they're gone. And there are a couple people who come to mind, right? Like Luka Doncic, you mentioned Zion Williamson, Nikola Jokic, some really exciting young NBA superstars. in these markets, and it's beginning to feel like, oh, are they just going to go to New York or LA?
Where does Giannis Antetokounmpo fit into this picture? Because there was great drama around whether he would re-up with the Milwaukee Bucks. Miami certainly was this figment of many Heat fans' imagination, at least in terms of, oh, they're going to go steal him away, or the Warriors might. But he ends up re-upping for a 5-year, $228 million deal. And it opens eyes everywhere. How did you see that deal through the prism of what we're discussing?
It was a big inflection point. And it was another moment where this thing was teetering on the brink of becoming an even more exaggerated situation in the league. And personally, I'm happy that Giannis stayed put and signed this extension in Milwaukee. I found it really interesting, Juan, though, Pablo, that this team had been an outstanding regular season team for 2 years in a row. He won the MVP. They did seemingly almost everything they could do except win a title to convince him to stay. And it was still a lot of people speculating he was gone, which I thought was pretty remarkable. And the other thing I think is interesting, never in this conversation was there talk of another major superstar coming to join him in Milwaukee. That's the kind of discourse we've gotten so used to,
right,
when you're talking about the Lakers or the Clippers or the Nets. It's like, oh, now they're going to get Harden plus Kyrie plus Durant. In Milwaukee, was never like, oh, now let's go get Paul George and Kawhi Leonard to team up here in Milwaukee.
No, it was, hey, do you like Eric Bledsoe? Is that enough? More Chris Middleton? Can we perhaps work out a deal for a free agent that ultimately does not want to join us? Like, that's kind of how that played out.
They were desperate to hang on to Giannis because they knew if they lost him, they'd have to start over from scratch. It was such a teetering high stakes moment. And when he resigned, you could almost feel the whole state of Wisconsin just exhale and say, oh, thank the Lord.
All right, coming up, what the NBA can do to push back on all of these coastal elites.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
If you're an origin market team and you want to compete and succeed and you're trying to be both realistic about your station in this marketplace, but also ambitious in terms of your goals, what do you have to do?
The thing that I think you have to do is become very, very good at drafting and developing NBA players from scratch. One, you have to identify talent. You have to always keep your draft picks. You can't trade them like these destination markets. You have to have those slots in the draft every year because that's your best chance to get a Giannis. And then you have to build the Giannis. You have to work with the players very well. You know, Kawhi Leonard's player development story in San Antonio is legendary with Chip England, who also developed Tony Parker and some of these other great Spurs players that were not lottery picks but became superstars. Very influential finals MVP in both cases there. But even if you do everything correctly and build one of these guys through the player development apparatus, you're still at risk of losing them. It doesn't go the other way. It's almost unfathomable, Pablo, to imagine somebody like Kawhi Leonard going from Los Angeles to Toronto or to San Antonio. And that's what's going on here.
Yeah, there's not been that pandemic phenomenon where it's like a bunch of people from New York get cabins in like Montana. Like, that's not happening among NBA players.
No, they're not living in Airbnbs in Kauai.
They're not surfing
Hawaii.
They're not surfing Zillow in like Cleveland being like, man, look how far my dollar goes. That's not a thing that Zion Williamson is going to be doing.
Bro, they don't shoot Space Jam in Idaho. You know what I mean?
So I do want to be solutions oriented here, Kirk. If the league is listening to us discuss this, and as always, NBA PR, I hope you are. If they're looking for ways to fix this issue, this problem of NBA stars being hypermobile and hyper preferential towards the coastal elite cities, towards those destination markets, what can the league itself do?
There's a couple of big, broad levers that the NBA collective bargaining agreement can do here. The number of years you can sign a contract for, 4 or 5, and then the amount of money you can pay a guy. And one of the big things in this conversation, Pablo, is that second thing. How much money can you pay a player? Mm. And right now, as crazy as it sounds, people like LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and Kawhi Leonard are really underpaid.
Yeah.
Because the league artificially constrains how much their teams can pay them, up to, I think, 35% of the salary cap number, so about $40 million, $35 million. That enables multiple superstars on one cap sheet. The idea that LeBron James makes the same amount of money, say, Russell Westbrook or John Wall, doesn't seem right to me.
No.
So one potential solution is to ramp up that number, to allow the Lakers to pay LeBron James 50% of the cap, for instance, then you have to choose LeBron James or Anthony Davis, not LeBron James and Anthony Davis, because you just don't have the funds to do it. LeBron James and Anthony Davis shouldn't be on the same team. A team shouldn't be able to afford Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. I think that's a pretty fair take.
It is.
Like, that doesn't seem right. And I say that out of the ultimate respect. So I think there is another sort of elegant solution where they have these supermax contracts where there could be a mega max category. Mm. If you win the finals MVP, if you're first team all NBA 2 or 3 or 4 times, you can check these boxes and then you can get 50, 55% of the cap. And that would also really restrict teams from loading up on those great, great players.
I love that. I love that so much. Perhaps purely because I often think of the NBA as like this high school cafeteria. I actually want the cool kids table to be even smaller and more removed. Like, I want there to be even more envy and jealousy around the mega max players. The super max guys, those are scrubs. The mega max table, that's where it's at. Because, Kirk, let's talk about LeBron James or James Harden in this way. What do those guys get paid, do you think, in that mega max contract world compared to what they're getting now?
It's a very complicated model. You have to tweak the knobs and the levers just right. But in my head, Pablo, I'll throw out 50 to 55% of the cap.
Mm.
It sounds crazy, but if you look at Messi's contract, it's not crazy.
Right.
LeBron James is Messi with a basketball, and he's criminally underpaid by this current format. And it allows him, if not encourages him, to go find teammates that are also very, very good and put them on the same roster. And one more thing that creeps into this discourse, and Jalen Rose did a great job of bringing this up on our airwaves, which is the rings discourse.
Yes.
The validation of an NBA superstar's entire career is determined by, did you win a ring? You can hear Shaq teasing Charles in your head right now.
4 rings. How many rings you got? How many rings you going to be remembered for? That's what, man, I thought.
Hey, what? Hey, if I had Dwayne Wade and Kobe carry me up and down the court, I'd have 5 or 6 too.
And that element, that post-Jordan, but did you win it all litmus test for these guys, that validation, I think also encourages people like LeBron, Durant, Harden, to team up in these super team environments so they can check that box and shut the haters up.
How concerned do you think the NBA is about what you have convincingly to me argued is something of a problem? Is this something they want to fix?
Here's the situation where it might be. TV ratings, the ultimate currency, social media buzz. You know, the NBA seems to be doing okay. People are discussing it. If the bottom of the pyramid of the NBA starts to crack, and by that I mean these origin markets, the Memphis, the Charlotte, the San Antonio, the Oklahoma City, the Indiana. If those markets and their fan bases start to get turned off by pro basketball and start to get turned off by this idea that they can draft players, but they're really just the AAA market for the big leagues and the big cities. If that were to happen, Pablo, they turn off their TVs too. They don't watch those NBA finals games. They don't watch those playoff games. They don't buy tickets to their own games because it feels like the system is rigged, that my hometown team is getting ripped off, and I'm just going to go watch the Hoosiers or I'm going to go watch the Longhorns instead. I think if this continues to perpetuate into the 2020s even more, you could see small market fan bases losing interest.
If this podcast was so convincing that the league was sort of animated to make changes, to make these mega max deals that you proscribe, to really think hard and soul search about how they actually want a more even distribution of talent throughout the entire country. And in the meantime, somehow, the New York Knicks missed their entire window to collect superstars. How did we, Kirk, talk to Knicks feds here, because they're thinking, wait a minute, we're coastal elites, but also somehow the exact opposite.
I love Knicks fans, and let me address them directly. I cannot wait to be in your building watching playoff basketball again. They just have to get a couple big time decisions right. And look, this year is pretty encouraging. The road from bad to great has to pass through 500. And that's where they are right now, and it's really encouraging. So I think it's only going to take one or two of these guys. That's what we've learned, and that could happen in the next few years.
The road from bad to great has to go through 500 is truly a statement that only a geographer, logician, author, and politician like Kirk Goldsberry could offer.
Thank you, Pablo. I appreciate that.
Okay, up next, the first female NFL ref to take the field at the Super Bowl. Reflects on what that means.
Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you people wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first one or for your fashionista mom who likes to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate with them both. You can shop by price anywhere from $25 and under to, say, $100 and below. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more, or gift lists like for the mom who has everything, or even pre-wrapped gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So, what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder.
Here's another story I want you to know. Super Bowl 55 is gonna be remembered as this massively historic event. Tom Brady winning his record 7th ring by blowing out his heir apparent, Patrick Mahomes, forever establishing himself as Zeus, basically, atop football's Mount Olympus. But back down on the field, among the mortals, another kind of history was being made as referee Sarah Thomas became the first woman to ever officiate a Super Bowl. Sarah got the call in her 6th season as a ref, and the players, from Mike Evans to Patrick Mahomes himself, they even took the time to find her and congratulate her before kickoff.
Congrats. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Congrats to you. Well deserved.
Sarah Thomas is part of a new ESPNW special, History in the Making, presented by SportsCenter, which airs this evening. And our colleague Lisa Salters sat down with her to discuss what it all meant.
It's the call that I know that every official hopes that they receive at some point during their career in the NFL. And being that this was my 6th season and I received the call, there's never been a moment that I have not been fully dedicated to this job and what I'm doing. So it just means that I ranked out number one at my position, and that's what I have set out to do since I got hired.
For anyone who's the first at anything, there is a sense of responsibility that comes with that, knowing that if you fall, you're going to wipe out everybody else who's climbing up behind you. Those people might not get an opportunity if you don't knock it out of the park. Did you feel any sense of that at all?
I didn't in the Super Bowl. I will tell you, there was a moment over the course of my career. It's my rookie year. It's my first Monday night game. And there was a big play at the end. And the next morning, all over social media, the headlines was basically the girl got it right. And I thought, if the girl had got it wrong, what would that have meant? So that's probably when that hit me, the torch, if you will, that any first carries. And I have just prided myself always to never embarrass me or embarrass the guys that I get to work with, or hopefully girls one day, and the supervisors and the people that took a chance on hiring me. But in that moment, that's when I said, this is much bigger than just me being a football official in the NFL.
So what does that mean to you when you look back on it now, when you reflect on it, just the people who are so supportive, the athletes, they don't have to care one way about officials anyway, but they were supportive and encouraging of you.
You know what? Every one of those players out there has a mother, and who knows if they have a daughter or a wife. And I think that it impacts them that they see that, that there's an opportunity for their daughters, their nieces, their, you know, to have this opportunity if they want to pursue it. And I reflect on even my child, my daughter. She's told me, she said, because of you, Mom, being able to wear your hair out and what you've done, I can do it too.
And for the little girls out there, the inspiration that you are, that Sarah Fuller is, just when you think about that, what goes through your mind?
That they don't ever have to ask, can girls do that when it comes to officiating football? And there's going to be a lot more, I like to say grass ceilings because I work on turf. But yeah, those glass ceilings are going to be shattered for whatever areas in a professional setting that need to be shattered and they can walk through. But that's one of the biggest things. But Lisa, it's not just for little girls. I have two young men I'm raising. And their generations and generations to come, there's going to be more and more women executives at the table. And I want them to respect and grow up respecting strong, confident, determined women.
You can catch the full interview with Sarah Thomas tonight on ESPN at 8 p.m. Eastern, alongside stories about other strong, confident, determined women. Women like Serena Williams and the players of the WNBA and Vanderbilt kicker Sarah Fuller and more. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.